Holcomb says no to Trump's payroll tax holiday. Explosive excerpts from a new Bob Woodward book, plus local Democrats leave for the GOP, and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending September 11th, 2020.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, Governor Holcomb announced Indiana won't participate in the payroll tax deferral for state workers offered by President Trump last month. The Trump executive order allows employers to push back payroll taxes from September through the end of December for employees making less than $4,000 every 2 weeks. But Governor Eric Holcomb says Indiana state government declined to do so.
It's a delay, and you'd end up having to pick up in January and pay double.
Trump officials have floated the idea of forgiving those deferred taxes entirely, but Congress would need to approve such a move, and it's unclear whether it will do so. Is this a prudent move from Governor Holcomb? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanes, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, State House reporter for the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting State House reporter Brandon Smith. Jennifer Hollowell, is Governor Holcomb making the right call here?
Absolutely, he's making the right call. I mean, in this case, you know, the employer, the state government, and we would be essentially putting ourselves in a situation where we're creating new debt if we went into this. So I think it's the right decision for the state. You know, for other companies, other employers, it may be a different decision, but for us, it's the fiscally responsible move. And because of his fiscal prudence and Republicans before him, you know, our state is in a position where we've weathered the pandemic better than others, like Illinois and some of the other states that were already cash strapped.
Ann Delaney, I don't hear a lot of people out there saying Governor Holcomb is making the wrong move here. You could interpret it perhaps as a slap in the face to Donald Trump, but is it really the only choice that Holcomb had?
It's the only decision any responsible employer would make. I did the same thing with my employees. This was not designed to do anything other than to wreak havoc with the Social Security system. If they forgive this debt, this is what funds Social Security. And then they'll come back in the spring and say, well, Social Security is bankrupt, so we have to privatize or do some other one of their half-brained ideas. No, I think he made the only responsible decision. This was not designed to do anything other than to wreak havoc with Social Security. If Donald Trump wanted to help people who are unemployed, he'd actually give benefits to people who are unemployed. All of these people are already employed. And it's just another one of his half-baked, half-thought ideas that I think Governor Holcomb did the only responsible thing.
Nikki Kelly, obviously Governor Holcomb's decision only applies to state government because that's who he controls here in this arena. But you've been trying to find other businesses who are going to do this and haven't been having much luck, have you?
Yeah, I talked to a number of businesses last week about it. Almost all of them said no. They did not. Actually, all of them told me no. Some of them didn't even want that on the record, though, because they didn't want it to look like they weren't looking out for their employees. But in their mind, their employees were just going to be in trouble in January unless they saved that money. And if the point is to give them money in their paycheck to spend, then, you know, also the exposure to businesses, because if an employee leaves, whether willfully or fired, that the business is on the hook to pay that money back, even if there's not an employee there to deduct that from.
Yeah. John Schwanes, to the point that Nikki just made, some of these businesses maybe didn't want to say it because they didn't want their employees to get upset, but do you think there are a lot of employees out there who are looking at this and going, where's my money?
There may be a few Hoosier workers out there who are desperate for any cash they can get their hands on right now. But I think for the most part, as Ann suggested, this would have affected people who have jobs. The bigger challenge right now, I think, is facing Hoosiers who are unemployed, lost their jobs either because of COVID-19 or they were already unemployed, and certainly this hampered their ability to land another position. So, no, I think that's why you're not hearing a whole lot of angst about this. People have jobs. They're the ones who would be affected. And I think most people would realize that you would have to, you know, pay the proverbial piper at some point. And while it's nice to have cash up front, you know, the bill would come due at some point, presumably.
Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week, we pose an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, do you want your employer to participate in President Trump's payroll tax deferral program? A yes or B no. Last week, we asked you if each candidate for governor should tell voters before the election who they'll name as education secretary, and this is one of the closest results we've had. 51% say yes, they should name that person. 49% say they shouldn't. If you'd like to take part in the poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, excerpts and interviews unveiled this week from Bob Woodward's new book on President Trump show that Trump privately believed the coronavirus was very serious as far back as early February, even as he publicly downplayed its significance. Woodward revealed some audio recordings of his more than a dozen interviews with President Trump, including Trump discussing COVID-19 in early February after a conversation with Chinese President Xi.
And so that's a very tricky one. That's a very delicate one. It's also more deadly than your strenuous flus.
Publicly, Trump would later say the number of cases would soon be down to zero and even called COVID-19 Democrats' new hoax. Trump says he wanted to avoid panic around the virus. Woodward's book also contains eyebrow-raising comments from former Indiana U.S. Senator Dan Coats. Coats, who served as Director of National Intelligence under Trump, is quoted as saying Trump, quote, doesn't know the difference between the truth and a lie. And, Delaney, last week it was anonymous sources saying that President Trump had called people who died in combat losers and suckers. This week it's excerpts from Bob Woodward's book, which at least come with audio recordings as opposed to just anonymous sources. But quite frankly, when it comes to the election, does any of this really matter?
Oh, I think this matters significantly. I mean, anybody who had doubts about the fact that he's a liar, and Mike Pence as well are liars, it's been put to rest with his own words. I mean, all he cared about was running on a strong economy. That was the only issue he had. He certainly hasn't brought us together. He certainly hasn't ended racial disparities. He certainly hasn't provided a healthcare system that everyone can participate in. So all he had was the economy, and he wanted to keep that economy open no matter what the cost in terms of human lives. That's what this comes down to. And that, and the fact that, you know, he says on one hand that you know, he's all for the military and he's all for veterans, but in his private comments, what he says is they're suckers because they didn't do it for the money, which is all that he cares about. So I think it matters. Support among active military and the families for Republicans has been very substantial, and it's going to be eroded by this because people understand what this man really is, and that is he's all out for money and he's all out for himself, and nothing, not even the lives of citizens of this country matter in comparison to that.
Jennifer Hollowell, whether it's this story, the last story, or the next story, does any of it matter when it comes to the election results we'll see in November?
I don't think it matters one bit. Woodward puts a book out every other year or so, and there's, you know, hype around it as there are with any of these kinds of books. And sometimes the bombshells don't live up to the, you know, ballyhoo before them. But what this is mostly about, I think, is more about style than substance, which is often the case. With the narrative around the president, but there are some significant substance points that shouldn't be forgotten. You know, I mean, he formed the coronavirus task force in January, which is, you know, much earlier than what people remember as the start of it. And he also banned travel from China, which Democrats excoriated, right? And then later had to realize that was probably a right decision, whether they want to admit it or not.
He didn't ban travel from China.
I just think
42,000.
I think the bottom line is the bottom line is, and your question is this changing anything? I can't imagine that there's actually an undecided voter out there at this point. It's really hard to imagine who those folks might be. But to the degree that there are any undecided voters, I don't think this book has any impact on them.
John Schwanes,
when you make that ideological, you and you lie to the voters, it makes a difference.
John Schwanes, I want to ask about something Jennifer Hollowell just said, which is the idea of she can't imagine an undecided voter. I feel the same way. I can't imagine there are many people out there right now who don't know how they're going to vote, at least for president this fall. So I'll ask you a version of what I've been asking so far, which is there any story that can be written between now and November 3rd that will substantially swing the results of this election?
I suppose a story that says that Donald Trump died in his sleep would maybe shake loose some of his supporters. Short of that, sorry for being flippant about a subject probably I shouldn't be flippant about, but short of that, I don't think that 30-some percent of true believers are going to go anywhere, regardless of what is published. Now, clearly, Bob Woodward is not just peddling hype, you know, every few years. He comes out with a book every few years because he's a respected journalist who has great sources, and he tells a great first draft of history. You know, some of his hyped stories were things called, like, Watergate. So I think his track record is pretty good in that regard. His newspaper, the Washington Post, has been keeping track of all of the lies and falsehoods that this president has been telling. I believe, I haven't checked it in the last few days, but I know I saw a piece where it's above 20,000 now, and I believe it's on track to break 25,000 by election day or come pretty close. So there have been 25,000 opportunities for people to sort of wake up and realize that this president is, as his own former national security advisor,
Director of National Intelligence.
Yes, thank you. Dan Coats said, you know, here's somebody who can't seemingly tell the difference. So they've had ample opportunities to grasp that point. And those who choose not to, they won't. I don't think there's anything that will change their minds.
Nikki Kelly, as a journalist, maybe I'm just working through something myself here. We don't write perhaps a lot about President Trump directly, of course, here at the state level, but do you ever feel sometimes like it doesn't almost matter what you're writing because people have already made up their minds regardless of what is written?
I mean, sure, but I also think we're all inside this bubble, this, you know, political bubble, and we're forgetting about, you know, people out in other parts of the state and the country who aren't as attuned as we are to every word that's said back and forth. So there are definitely some people who are more independent-minded who maybe are still trying to work it through, and I just try to focus on those people and hope, you know, I'm bringing some sort of news, whether it be on the state level or the federal level, to them to at least consider when they're trying to make their choice.
Well, three local officials across the state have switched parties in recent weeks. Two southern Indiana sheriffs and a region mayor announced they're becoming Republicans. All three officials cited issues with the National Democratic Party as reasons for their switches. Hobart Mayor Brian Snedeker says he believes the progressive left has driven moderates and conservatives away from the party. Vanderburgh County Sheriff Dave Wedding specifically points to widespread protests over racial inequity and police killings of black men and women as the reason for his party change.
I watch the news every day. I'm shocked. I'm shocked watching things in Portland and Seattle where night after night they're out rioting. They're not protesting, they're rioting and putting police officers' lives in danger every single night. And as a sheriff, I couldn't imagine putting my deputies in that situation.
And Posey County Sheriff Tom Latham said he could no longer be a member of an organization that he says promotes defunding the police. John Schwanes, just how big a problem is this for Democrats?
I don't think it's a real significant problem. I think this is probably, I mean, the stated reason may be, you know, maybe attributed to these protests, but I think there are other factors at play. You look at the demographics in some of these counties, Vanderburgh County, for instance. While Evansville certainly is predominantly Democratic, you look at the county as a whole, and that's a county as a whole that Donald Trump carried by 16 percentage points over Hillary Clinton. And the high water mark for Democrats, when they actually, if you looked at baseline votes, the last time that was a blue county overall in terms of baseline voting was 2008, and then it's been trending, you know, the red line up, the blue line down. So it may be as much about just the political calculus as anything else. I would just say that a lot of times when people change parties, it ends up not working out so well for them because they're sort of not trusted by either party. We have a history of it in Indiana where it wasn't a long-term tenure in office for individuals who turned changed parties, even at the federal level. Arlen Specter, you know, here's a guy who had been a senator for I don't know how many terms, and you switch parties and it didn't work out.
Nikki Kelly, do you think this is that we can read any sort of trend here on the broader Indiana Democratic Party level, or is this just three local cases that happen to come within a couple of weeks of each other?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it's fascinating and interesting, but I don't know that I'd say it's so much a trend. I do find it interesting that on the Democrat side, there seems to be less of an ability to discern between sort of a state Democrat and Indiana Democrat versus the federal versus the national party. Whereas I know a ton of Republicans privately that they don't agree with the national GOP message or form, but they would never come out because, you know, they really separate sort of the state party versus the national. I see that differently, Republicans and Democrats.
Jennifer Hollowell, I want to ask you about this, looking at the Republican side of this. Obviously, this is great for the Republican Party to be able to trumpet, but is there a place for people who were very recently, as of 2 weeks ago, Democrats in a Republican Party?
Oh, absolutely. I think there is. And I don't think this is about politics, really. So, and there's another person, the president of the Lowell Town Council, which, again, I think that's Lake County. So Hobart and Lowell are certainly not Republican territory as far as the county goes. But, yeah, I mean, our party has been growing. We want to grow. And certainly these are folks that I think we probably align with on most issues. And they were probably conservative Democrats, and the Democrat Party has just gone so far left that it's left them. And, you know, some perspective in terms of like the Southern Indiana portion, when I worked at the State Republican Party in 2002 and then on Mitch Daniels' first campaign in 2004, we had a very concerted Southern Indiana strategy that we worked on in order to flip the South, because for a long time, Democrats would vote for the Southern Indiana would go for Republican for president, and then it would be Democrat for state and local. And again, as the Democrat Party nationally got further and further to the left and others followed, we started gaining ground and flipping voters. And that's why you've seen such a tremendous shift in the state legislature, because as those folks retired, they got replaced by Republicans.
Ann Delaney, is there a place for conservative Democrats in the Indiana Democratic Party?
Is, and there are a lot of them, and the idea that the legislature reflects what the voters are is laughable, Jennifer. It reflects the gerrymandering by computer, because the state
the president
state
by level, 19
on the state that, level the Democrats that's just majority. Get less than 42-46% of the vote, and they have 20% in the Senate, and they have 30 some odd percent in the House. It's all about gerrymandering. These are three people who are interested in self-preservation, and they're not even interested in the issues. If they're worried about defunding the police, they wouldn't be Republicans, because that's what Mitch McConnell is doing by refusing to pass a bill in the Senate that does something for local and state governments so that they can pay these first responders. You know, the idea that we're in favor of the riots is ludicrous. Joe Biden has come out adamantly against them, and nobody's talking about defunding the police except Mike Pence and Donald Trump. And they're listening
that's
to the propaganda.
That's absolutely untrue.
They're listening to the propaganda of the Republican Party, and they're in there for self-preservation.
No.
And they're really not very bright, because John is right. The path forward to these people who change parties in order to perpetuate themselves in office is a very, very difficult one to tread.
It's totally untrue. There are Democrat leaders, governors, mayors, etc., who are out there supporting, promoting, defending, apologizing, standing down.
It's a lie.
No.
Trump was a Democrat up until a few years ago, so I guess people switched.
That's true. Let's move on. Republican State Senator Jim Merritt announced Monday he is retiring after 30 years in the legislature. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Lauren Chapman reports he will step down on November 4th.
Merritt's 30-year tenure makes him the longest-serving current Republican state senator. He's also the longest-serving caucus chairman in the history of the Indiana General Assembly, as well as the chair of the Senate Utilities Committee. He represents parts of Marion and Hamilton counties. Merritt authored Indiana's Lifeline Law, which allows underage Hoosiers to call or text 911 to help save the life of an inebriated minor without fear of prosecution. And Aaron's Law, which allows a person to obtain a prescription for naloxone if they believe someone they know is at risk for an opioid overdose. A private Republican caucus will choose Merritt's replacement to serve out the last 2 years of his term. That person will become the 14th legislator sent to the State House by a private caucus in the last 4 years.
Nikki Kelly, Merritt told Fox 59's Kayla Sullivan that he's leaving office in part because he's interested in running for statewide office and feels unable to do so effectively from the state Senate. Does that make sense to you?
Not really. I don't see any reason why he couldn't pursue a statewide office by still finishing his term. Honest, and I'm glad he told Kayla that, but there's nothing in his statement that explained or gave a reason at all to, you know, people in his district that voted for him. And there's also nothing that explains why he's waiting November 4th to step down. I mean, frankly, if he doesn't want to do the job, then he should just leave now and get someone in there who does.
Yeah, John Schwann, the same question. Does it make a lot of sense? I mean, first of all, let's talk about the statewide offices that are up the next few times. There's an open Secretary of State's race. I believe there's an open state treasurer's race in 2022. And then in 2024, of course, there's an open governor's race if Eric Holcomb wins re-election in 2020. But do you need to quit in November of 2020 in order to run for either of those things?
One would think not. I mean, he has run for office before from his position in the Senate in terms of a mayoral bid. Now, granted, the argument would be that he was focused on a very small geographic area, and that may make a difference. But on the flip side, you know, the General Assembly is not a full-time legislature. It meets 2 or 4 months a year. And so one would presume there would be ample time to campaign. But he's been a good – the Lifeline Law is a great law. He's been a good public servant, and I think – I hate to see people with that kind of institutional memory and commitment to public service leave office regardless of their party affiliation.
Jennifer Hallwell, Merritt's decision to retire with 2 years left in his term or resign with 2 years left in his term has shed the spotlight once again on how many members of the General Assembly first get into office via these – private Republican or Democratic caucuses. Is that a fair system?
I mean, I think it is. It's the system we have. You have to have some process in place for folks who for whatever reason may leave midterm. And so it's worked for years. It certainly has happened more often recently, it seems. But, you know, my husband and I live in Senator Merritt's district, and I can personally attest to the fact that he has been an incredibly engaged and responsive senator. I mean, he responds to constituents sometimes in person, goes to their home to talk to them about issues that they may have. So anyway, he's leaving the Senate knowing that he has led efforts and legislation that literally changed Hoosiers' lives, and I'm certainly grateful for that.
And Delaney, elections are costly. That's the reality. Is the private caucus system simply the best way we have to fill an unexpired term?
No, I think what we need to have is legislators who are truthful. I mean, if you're not going to run again, resign so that they can have an election in the course of the normal course of business. I mean, the idea that he would not serve out his term and then try to seek statewide office is really... It's laughable, and this has happened so many times.
From both parties, Ann.
Well, yeah,
mostly
it is both parties.
Republicans, however.
It's both parties.
All right.
It's mostly by the Republicans.
Well, finally, today marks, of course, the 19th anniversary of the September 11th, 2001 terrorist attacks. Jennifer Hallwell, I was thinking about this. The phrase never forget is often used, obviously, in conjunction with the 9/11, but has it faded from the public consciousness?
I think while it's maybe not in the daily thoughts of all Americans, I do believe that we have never forgotten the kind of kind of fear and pain, but also the unity and resolve that, you know, altered our lives in so many different ways, and also, you know, mobilized a whole group of people to join the military and defend our country. So, I mean, I believe we haven't forgotten and hopefully never will.
All right. And Ann Delaney, if you don't mind my asking, what's the memory from 9/11 that stands out in your mind?
My memory is running in the morning and hearing no airplanes overhead after 9/11. And I think Jennifer's right. I don't think anybody will ever forget what happened that day.
All right. I just heard today that there is likely going to be an NBA player drafted a little later this year who was born after September 11th, 2001. So. Time, man. That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Jennifer Hollowell, John Schwanis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Fort Wayne Journal-Gazette. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR, or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations and by Ice Miller. Ice Miller is a full-service law firm committed to helping clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com. The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.